Well, thank you very much, David, for a beautiful introduction. Thank you, Murray, for, as always, setting the tone, although I shared your sadness at the announcement about Terrison. I just found out, as you did. But thank you very much for helping us conceptualize this and put it in a British Columbia context. Thank you to the chapter for all the hard work you've done putting this together tonight, and to everybody at the office, Tara, Ava, Carlene, and Ava's wonderful partner, Doug, who really looked after me today. You were just terrific. I'd like to also make sure I introduce Chief Gary John, who's on our board. Chief John, Gary John is right here, and he's here. And I just want to say a very special word before I start about some people who are in this room who led one of the most important fights in British Columbia's history. Ginny Sims and Ken Novakowski of the British Columbia Teachers Federation. Don't mean to embarrass you. Let me tell you, Ginny, you were on television not just about every night in British Columbia. You were on television all over the country. Yes. You became a symbol of somebody who would not crack, who didn't doubt what you were about, who didn't doubt the justice of your cause, and you gave enormous strength to people here in British Columbia, but right across the country, and I want you to know that. I am going to talk about some national issues tonight. I said to Murray and I were in a meeting earlier today, and I said, you know, I've noticed something and I just feel like I'm in a room full of people I love and know. I mean, Dorothy and, I mean, just, you know, you guys, it's just so wonderful to see so many people here. But as I travel across the country, I have noticed something in the last few years, and I've noticed that we are becoming more involved locally or provincially. Now, I really believe in local politics, as we all do, but I've noticed a waning of the concept or the an analysis, perhaps, or a vision of the national scene. And I think that's perfectly predictable, as we predicted at the time, and Murray and Art QBSC in the room, and so many of us in this room fought so hard. When we first fought against the Canada-US Free Trade Agreement, and then against NAFTA, and against all the deregulation, and against all of the cutting of all of the ribbons, I call them ribbons of interdependence, it was bound to happen that we were going to lose some of those keystone issues that kept us together. Losing the Canada Assistance Plan is just one small example of losing the concept of the national standard for social assistance. And so more and more and more we're dealing with services that are being broken or clawed back or privatized by our provincial governments, and so the fight has gone provincial. And so I want to tonight talk about the national and international scene, and as I know that the fight that you've got here against the Campbell government is very powerful and it's very strong and it's immediate, and you must fight it. And there's no question there whatsoever, but I do want to say to you tonight that there is something else happening at the federal level which is getting very little attention by anybody. Certainly the mainstream media has no desire to let us in on any of this, and certainly the big business community wants this as quiet as possible, because they damn near lost the last time they tried to have a public fight about our relationship with the United States. So but what's happening at the federal level will impact on whatever you're fighting for or against here. So I'm going to roll us out of British Columbia for a few minutes and talk about this thing that some of us are calling deep integration, deep continental integration, NAFTA plus, and so on. Now, first thing I guess I want to say, I want to establish what I'm talking about, because this is not a fear or a threat. This is a reality. For several years now, a plethora of task forces and cross-border working groups, coordinating committees, consultations have been operating to harmonize. No, wait, I'm going to have to think about this. A musician just said to me, harmony's good. You're thinking, unison is not good, so I'm going to have to try to think about the language here. I have been using this term. But to bring together and to operationalize North American regulations and standards, homeland security measures, economic policies towards the creation of a fortress North America. In effect, they're talking about creating or are in the process of creating a common market, North American common market, which would be one trade bloc. So we would negotiate with the United States as one trade bloc at the WTO. And this would be comparable to the European Union, but without the environmental and social safeguards that were originally built into the European Union. Now, I'm telling you this is already happening. Fortress North America is the brainchild, you will not be surprised to hear, of the big business community in Canada, particularly the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, which is the same group as the used to be the Business Council on National Issues who brought us the first two trade agreements, same Tom DeKino, same 150 big corporations. They just don't want to talk about national issues anymore. They've outgrown such things. And they and the right-wing institutes, research institutes and think tanks like the C.D. Howe Institute and the Fraser Institute. Now, this lobby has been promoting this harmonization since NAFTA, under which they did very well. As you know, we at the time said you're going to put all our eggs in one basket, and sure enough, as a result of these trade agreements, almost 90% of all our exports go to the United States, making us very vulnerable when the U.S. says no, for instance, on softwood lumber. But they've done very well by it. The 150 companies in this lobby group were worth about $1 trillion 15 years ago. Their net worth is now about $2.5 trillion. So it's been a very, very good agreement for these folks. Well, then came 9/11, and suddenly they had a real excuse to say to the Canadian people, we now have to offer up everything left in the store. As Marie says, you know, I give you everything or everything plus, and that's my final offer. Suddenly, continued trade access to the U.S. markets was dependent on convincing the U.S. that the border could be secured, and that that meant offering, this is from the business point of BCN, or the Canadian Council of Chief Executives point of view, they say they have to harmonize not only all aspects of trade and border policies, but continental security, defense, and resource policies as well. Now, when they're challenged about the far-reaching implications of what they have promoted, the Canadian Council of Chief Executives simply says now that because the economies of our two countries have merged so deeply, there is no point in Canada having its own regulatory regime or own domestic laws. They actually say that. There's no hiding what they're saying. It's just that it has not been published very much. And in fact, they call the regulatory differences between our countries the tyranny of small differences. So this officially started, or post 9/11 officially started, with a report from the C.D. Howe Institute, which they called the Big Idea, and it was called Shaping the Future of North American Economic Space, a Framework for Action. And C.D. Howe argued that Canada should entice the U.S. government into deeper economic integration in order to keep that border flowing by offering full cooperation with the War on Terror, more control over Canada's energy supplies, and full harmonization of our regulatory regime. 13 reports followed from the C.D. Howe Institute, which have been a blueprint. The next year, the Canadian Council of Chief Executives launched their North American Security and Prosperity Initiative, which the National Post called a blueprint for a powerhouse North American trading bloc to take on the world, shielded by a fortress North American-style defense perimeter. And only months later, a task force on the future of North America was set up by the big business lobby, the U.S. Foreign Relations Committee, and the big business lobby in Mexico. And the Canadian arm of it was chaired by John Manley, who was Chrétien's deputy prime minister and a hawk, and Tom DeKino of the Canadian Council of Chief Executives. And they called their report a bold vision for regional integration and a sweeping new plan for the continent. This is their language, and they called for a common North American brand name, trade bloc, a security perimeter, one common passport, one common immigration and refugee system, a customs union, a common currency, one inspection grid, one testing regime. So if something has been given the okay in the United States, we couldn't have a separate set of rules around it, like bovine growth hormone, which we managed to keep out of Canada, an integrated electrical grid, and a North American resource pact, including energy and water. The Toronto Star called the task force report a new vision for a fortress North America in which the continent is wrapped in a security perimeter from the Arctic to the Guatemalan border. So no surprise, when Vicente Fox of Mexico and George W. Bush of the United States and Paul Martin of Canada got together in Waco, Texas this past March, they signed an agreement. It's called the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, and it is almost identical, word for word, to the blueprint that was put out by these other groups. Perhaps not as detailed as what the task force outlined, but they actually even use the same kind of language as the big business lobby group has using. Weeks later, Reg Elcott announced what they call the Smart Regulation Initiative, and that's a promise to work with U.S. regulators to revise and harmonize regulations in areas as diverse as food inspection, drugs, seeds, health and safety, and the environment in order to integrate markets across the continent. And then this past June, a high-level report to the leaders was made by the very senior ministers in the three countries in order to lay out the plan, in order to carry out what was signed, the partnership that was signed. And they lay out a very detailed blueprint for harmonization of energy, nuclear, security, and regulatory regimes across the border. Now, I bet you haven't read about this on the front page of your newspaper, have you? I bet if you had, you'd be a little concerned about it. And what we've done at the Council of Canadians and in my book, we have outlined this in great detail. And if you want to see any of these reports, they're all on our website, and I describe them in detail in the book. Now, the potential of this is huge, and there is absolutely no debate yet in this country around it, and there's only one sector dictating the terms and conditions of this process, and that's the big business community. And I would be concerned about this in any case, but I am doubly, triply, hundredfold concerned that we are doing this with George W. Bush's administration, because this is arguably the most right-wing, anti-environment, anti-human right, anti-social right president in recent American history. And I did a lot of research on George W. Bush and the people who brought him to power, and I believe that we are looking at nothing short of a revolution in the United States. And what really is so important for us to understand are the structural changes that have been made in the United States under that man in the last 4.5, almost 5 years now. The plan was laid out by Karl Rove, the famous Karl Rove, years ago. He said, we will build a movement of the right, and we will bring together different groups that may not look as if they have a lot in common at first, but they will work in common cause, and we will get rid of every living, breathing liberal, is what they call anybody who doesn't agree with them, from every level of government, from school boards to the Supreme Court, every level of elected government, and they have set out to do this, and they are doing it systematically. Karl Rove targeted, he calls them the new trade unions, right-wing evangelicals. He says they have been disenfranchised from politics, and if we can just harness their power and their voting power, we can permanently put this revolution into effect. George Bush is surrounded, not only has he been put in power by people with this belief, but he is surrounded by people who believe in what's called end time. And that is that God is going to bring soon, many people, is going to bring a time when many people are taken up into heaven. And those who are left behind will either have to make a decision to somehow convince God that they can come up as well, or they're going to die horrible deaths. And this will precede Armageddon, and Armageddon is going to come after floods and pestilence and war. So the Iraq war was one of the signs that Armageddon is coming, and therefore the Iraq war was good. And it's very, very important to not to take care of the environment, because environmental degradation is one of the signs that Armageddon is coming. And there are people around George Bush. I'm not talking about some nuts off in the hinterland. I'm talking about the head of the Senate committee, majority leader, the former House leader, Tom DeLay. These people deeply believe this. Just one brief example is James Inhofe, who's a senator from Oklahoma. And he's an end time believer. He says there's nothing he's ever called on to decide that he can't find a literal instruction from in the Bible. And he is backed by big oil and hates environmentalists and wants to do away with the Environmental Protection Agency. And he is the head of the Senate Environment Committee, just to give you one example of what we're talking about.